This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. William Grider has spent 40 years in the trenches of journalism. He's written for some of the most prestigious organizations in the country, the Washington Post, the Atlantic Monthly, among them. And he has confronted power at the highest levels. In the early 80s, he was able to get Ronald Reagan's budget director to admit that trickle-down economics was a Trojan horse designed to lower the country's top tax rate. And he has not stopped confronting those in power and talking about its influence. He continues today as correspondent for The Nation. He is in town now to speak at Duke University, giving a talk called The Politics of Money in Search of Democracy. And William Grider is in the studio right now. Bill Grider, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thanks, Frank.
So tell us about this talk, The Politics of Money in Search of Democracy.
Well, I'm staying in character and saying improbable things in a way that I believe. And now is we are allegedly celebrating the centennial of the Federal Reserve System, created in 1913, 1914 by the so-called Progressive Movement. And my theme, which I'm going to write about in an upcoming issue of The Nation magazine, is 100 years should be enough. We should by now understand that this system that was created at the dawn of the industrial capitalism for America and the world doesn't work.
Well, and you've written about this, Secrets of the Temple, How the Federal Reserve Runs the Country. That was a book that received wide attention. Doesn't work. This is the thing that balances, that keeps the boom and bust out of the economy and stabilizes all of these economic factors that otherwise would crush us. So what do you mean doesn't
work? And ordinary citizens, if they are alive and sensitive to what's happening, will say, yeah, that's right. That is what they were supposed to do. And that's a part of what I'm saying. I'm kind of conflicted on this because I did write this very long book and I got very close to the institution and treated it with respect. I didn't just throw mud balls. And admiration in some ways. This is going back over the last 30 years. At this point, I'm willing to be much harsher because of what's happened in the last 30 years. And it's a failure that is not just another turn of the wave. I think it's much more profound about what's missing in American governance, first of all, but also American capitalism. And with my usual optimism, I think someday the country will face these things. Right now, as you know, the political system is looking the other way and pretending that nothing has happened.
Well, so the Federal Reserve System and talking about what's missing in the system, has it failed because it isn't doing its job well enough or because by doing its job it's a failure
I think more fundamental, actually. It's not incompetence, although it has been incompetent about some things. It is not simply the institutional bias in favor of banking and bankers and finance, which I think people now have come to understand. These guys come first, and look at how well they did while the rest of the country is still in the soup. I think the trouble with the Fed is it's an antique. It was created for an age and circumstances that no longer exists. And they do the best they can to operate with that reality, and they get things wrong again and again and again. And the same people suffer the consequences, which are sort of ordinary working people in lots of sectors of the society and the economy. And that's why I think we're not going to get things right until there is a rather fundamental reform of the governing institutions, which will in turn produce the same kinds of changes we need to see in the private sector. And just one example of that is in this crisis of the last 5 years or so, the Fed created something like $3 or $4 trillion to pump into the financial system, et cetera. And then when it came to the real economy, where people were and still are suffering the down draft, it was limited by essentially the conservative claim that you can't do anything for the real economy because that would somehow disrupt capitalism as the way it's supposed to work, which is, of course, nonsense. And if you know the history of the Fed, you know that it's nonsense. But Ben Bernanke, who is a conservative in most dimensions, actually tried to move in that direction and kept asking the Congress and the White House, President Obama, to let us get together and work on something that will really actually help the real economy. Now, he didn't say it that bluntly, but that was his message. And they gave him a kind of cold shoulder. They ended up debating about how much can we cut the federal government to be righteous, which was, of course, the opposite direction that the Fed was trying to go in. This is a profound contradiction of government. When you've got the federal government pulling and pushing in two different directions, the economy is bound to suffer, and in fact, it has.
What's fascinating that when you have to get money back, pumped back into the system because of the lock on finance capital, the lock on money that can be lent, that you would give the money to the very institutions that broke the system instead of the people who are losing their houses. So if you gave them the money by way of voucher, they would pay back, they would own their house, and the money would be in the system. Instead, they lost their house, and the people who wrecked the system got the dough.
Bernanke sort of tiptoed up to the possibilities you're describing, particularly about the housing sector, which was the most obvious hole in the system. And he either I don't have the reporting to say confidently what happened. I think what happened is that he got blocked by politics, which is ironic since the Fed is supposed to be above politics. But also he may have just choked. He is a conservative guy, and this would have taken a departure from form that maybe was just beyond his nerve or imagination. We don't know yet. We'll find out 5 or 10 years from now. But the point is, where is the Democratic Party? And not to mention the Republicans. We know where the Republicans are. They don't want to do anything. But the Democrats sat there sort of stupefied and played around with deficit reduction and all these other things when the country is burning. And I'm a lot harsher on Democratic Party than I am on the Federal Reserve.
Well, and that raises, I guess, the question about the second part of your talk, in search of democracy. If the Democrat, if there is no political party that can represent this, if the political discourse is blocked, then are we in danger of losing a democratic process to a concentration of wealth mostly in the financial sector?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's not exactly a new story. I mean, one of the points I'm conveying to people who have a sense of history, the country has circled back to where we were in 1913 when Woodrow Wilson and the progressives said, we have a solution. We'll create a central bank. Okay, 100 years, leave out the 100 years in between. We are now back at the very same arguments.
Well, the debate was interrupted, wasn't it, by 50 years of geopolitical struggle over economic policy, and you've talked about this too. The fact is the debate, the political debate, has been restricted or had been restricted in that Cold War era. There were things we couldn't talk about because you weren't American. That's over, and you're suggesting, and I've heard you do it before, that the time has come to have this conversation that has been blocked for 50 years, 60 years.
Yeah, and that's, I was you're younger, but I was old enough to be a little boy child of the Cold War and recognized belatedly how much it shut down minds. And part of that was righteous patriotism. We're not going to be like those commies, right? We're fighting the commies. And we did fight them on a lot of fronts. And that part of it was also, we don't want to get too close to those left-wing ideas because they'll be mistaken for commies. And those forces, plus the economics of who got help and who didn't, we're still shaking that off slowly, I would say. And one of the profound pivots that this country faces now is we are, without doubt, the toughest, strongest, most aggressive military force in the world. And that's been pretty good at intimidating other people for decades, generations. And it's losing its edge, in part because we have, with some repetition, gone into wars we didn't understand were civil wars, basically, and we pretended they were Cold War fronts. And we won't have to list all of them, but that reflex is continuing. And I will say for our current president, he is trying to edge the country out of that posture. And I mean, and I'm not being cynical here. He hasn't succeeded entirely yet, but I salute him for trying. And the people, which is not altogether unusual, are way out ahead of the political parties. They don't want to go to another war in the Middle East.
Are they as far out ahead on these economic changes and a more robust economic conversation?
You know, this is more an article of faith than my evidence, but I actually believe so. The ideological distinctions, left, right, liberal, conservative, all that stuff, what government can do, what can't it do, are just bunk to ordinary people. They're not expert on what government does or how it does it. But they know perfectly well when the government wants to intervene in the private sector, it can do so quite effectively. The arguments over who gets that relief and who doesn't. Nevertheless, I'm still confident that if you put them in a room and had a long-term discussion about, well, what should we be doing, you wouldn't hear that left-right distinction. People would say, does it work? And does it make sense? And is it fair? You know, basic question. And this is, again, let's go back to my friends at the Fed. This is my quarrel with that institution, that they feel forbidden to ask those, even raise those questions.
Bill Greider, great to talk with you. Thank you so
much.
Thank
you, likewise.
William Greider is a national affairs correspondent for The Nation, giving a talk called The Politics of Money in Search of Democracy. That talk is from 4 to 6 on the East Campus in room 101, West Duke Building, at Duke University. We have all the information at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, our news roundtable takes a look back at the week in review. Stay tuned to the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill.